I always wear my mask and wash my hands after going home.
It's a good tuna, but I think I paid too much.
I am the king of the ink.
Welcome to the Japan What Podcast, episode 146. This podcast covers AI markets in Japan, Society 5.0, rising conflict in the Indo-Pacific, news analysis, and more. And I am your host, MatthewPMBigelow.com, coming at you from the Tomihisacho Studios in Shinjuku, Tokyo, Japan, the armpit of Asia. Thank you for joining us on today's show. Lots to cover today. Anything to get? Oh, I made an amazing bacon and egg sandwich today. Just set the day off right. Woke up at 5:30 in the morning. By the time I got that bacon and egg sandwich, I was ready. The key to the bacon is slow fry. So the fat of the bacon leaks out, and then you use that fat to cook the bacon itself. So the it kind of reabsorbs that fat. But you don't want it crispy. You just want a little tiny bit of crisp on the outside, but you want it to be thoroughly cooked with its own fat. So good. It set the day off right, especially when you wake up at 5:30 in the morning. Never used to be that dude. I am that dude today. But we're going to kick off today with a little bit of high or not high. I'm going to read a news story about some guy's butt. It's quite different than bacon. Was he high or not high?
High. Or not high.
I saw this and I thought, well, I used to cover just odd items at the beginning of the podcast, and it was services. Now it's just kind of expanded into just the title is odd or what or high or not high. Man arrested after pressing naked butt against Tokyo water faucet in park. Coming to us from JapanToday.com on April 7th, and we're recording this on April 8th. This is exclusive to Japan Today, by the way. Police in Tokyo have arrested a 56-year-old man on suspicion of public indecency and property damage after he pressed his naked butt against a water faucet in a park in Setagaya Ward. According to police, the man, who claims to be self-employed, pressed his anus against a water faucet used for drinking in the park at around 2:20 a.m. on April 1st, Sankei Shimbun reported. Around 3 a.m. on the same day, police officers spotted the man riding a bicycle with his lower body naked on the street near the park and arrested him for public indecency. Later, police found a photo of the man pressing his anus against the water faucet on his smartphone. The park banned use of faucets for the day until they could be cleaned. Police quoted the man as saying, "I did it because I was sexually aroused. I used binoculars to make sure there were no people around beforehand." End quote. So I thought this guy was high. But then after, like, he hands over his smartphone, they gain access to it somehow, the police. They find a picture of his anus on the water faucet, the faucet. Faucet d'anus. And he says, "Yeah, I was sexually aroused. I used binoculars beforehand." Now, if you know people who do drugs or have done drugs yourself, before you make a very stupid drug-induced decision, like pressing your anus up against a water faucet in a park, you don't grab a pair of binoculars, do you? Nay, you would, you'd start giggling to yourself. "I know I shouldn't, but I'm gonna anyway." So the fact that he used binoculars makes me think he was not high. How about you? Do you think he was high before he pressed his anus against a park faucet in Setagaya-ku?
High. Or not high.
Maybe he's one of those very severely, like, repressed homosexuals, like a super closeted type. And it, maybe that would be more of a logical explanation. And then he pushes it down so hard. It was a daily life. his wife and kids. I can't. No, I can't. Or maybe I should. How do I? Ooh, look at that water faucet in the park. Why isn't it giving me a chubby? And probably repressed homosexual would be my guess. You can't repress that stuff, people. If you're gay, you're gay. It's fine. Go live your life however you want it. And you don't need to be fabulous. You could run an ad agency. Do whatever you want. But you can't push that stuff down. Otherwise, what happens? You know what happens in the park. All right, moving on. A couple of things about Japan before we move on to some of the main topics today for Japan Society 5.0. And this is just some ideas of what's kind of going around in Japan. And let's begin, just call it Weird Corner. We could have called the other one Weird Corner as well.
Weird Corner.
This first one is not so weird, but they get weird after that. This is just, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this. The Nikkei is like at record highs and the economy is just going kapow, kaboom. And my family have invested in the stock markets over the years just as like a place to put some money. And it's like, oh, well, the returns are great if you can get the returns. But you're still not living with that money. It's for somewhere, someplace down the road. But in your daily, and I'm fine with that, by the way. That's just how investment works. But then on the daily side of things, inflation is going up, spending is going down, price hikes are going up, but they don't really match for inflation. And that's only if you're like in a super powerful union. Japan's February household spending falls 0.5%, down for 12th month. And I can concur with this. My spending is it's down as well. Tourism might have something to do with that as well. You don't want to go out in the town if you're just surrounded by tourists all the time. And Japan is now Kosamui. It's soy cowboy without the strippers. Japan's household spending in February fell 0.5% from a year earlier, declining for the 12th consecutive months as warm temperatures reduced utility bills. That's the reason. It's been a miserable March. It's just beginning of April. But yeah, sure. Households of two or more people spent on average 279,000 yen, with spending also dented by prolonged price hikes. That would be inflation. Expenditures on water and energy bills. Okay, it's pretty boring from there. I just thought I would bring it up just as to mention that. Yes, the Japanese incomes are going down as well in related to inflation, but we always hear like, you should be so happy. The stock market is up. And it's like, okay, I am when I look at where that nest egg is, but you can't necessarily crack it. And then you crack it and bring it into the yen. And then you start losing the value on the yen because the yen's going down and the inflation's going up. So the imports go up. Now it's like, okay, I should have kept it in the egg, but then you can't use it. Very strange. It's not a complaint against the investments that we have, by the way. It's just an observation. We have it, but we can't use it. Okay, that's called investment. For rainy days, as we all know. Next one. Shizuoka governor to resign after gaffe insulting vegetable sellers. This one has more serious connotations. There's a maglev train being built, trying to connect Tokyo to Osaka. And it's being held up and delayed for potentially years because of the politics of Shizuoka. I don't know why people elect these types of people, but they do over and over and over again. But I'm glad this guy is out because I want maglev trains. The idea of getting on a maglev train, linear motor car, as it's called in Japanese, rinia motaka, where you have all of these superconductors that have to be kept at very low temperatures. The train like is locked into a position above the magnets a couple inches off, and you're basically just flying. You could go so fast, and it's silent. But the Shizuoka governor has been like preventing some sort of tunneling to go on due to environmental concerns for years now. It's just like his own personal beef, making everybody live in the past. Fuck this guy. The governor of Shizuoka Prefecture said Tuesday he will resign amid backlash over a gaffe saying civil servants being inducted into the prefectural government were intelligent people, quote, unlike those who sell vegetables. The guy, Kawakatsu, Governor Heita Kawakatsu said during the address that where he made the gaffe, the so-called gaffe, basically he's a bigoted dick. Quote, everyone here is a brainy and intelligent person. Unlike those who sell vegetables, take care of cows, or create things, he said. He also told the incoming civil servants to remain honest, watch their language, and that it was important to be compassionate and stick to your beliefs. Anyways, the fact that anybody would look at a government official and assume that they are smarter than the rest of us speaks to some sort of inbred elitism going around in the amongst the people of Shizuoka there. And I'm glad this guy's gone, and I hope that the magnetic rail can proceed with due speed. Yes, tunnel towards that finish line. Now, this next one, that's a weird corner kind of an idea, right? Hey, I'm a politician. I'm smart. Unlike business people who are, I just want money. It's like, okay, who do you think's paying your salary with their taxes, you dick? Japanese firms plan for CO2 export storage in Southeast Asia on rise. This comes to us. The last one as well was from Japan Today. This is a Japan Today trifecta. But this one's sourced originally from Kyoto News. This is from today, April 8th, 2024. Now, I think that the green cult is a little too strong. And I kind of want there to be a little bit of a green cult around. People like conservationists who say, hey, you know, if we get rid of this lake, we're going to lose some sort of fish thing. Maybe we could do something about that. Or, hey, look at all this pollution over there. We should clean it up. But then it gets to this level where it now it's like we need to have net zero, and we can't have any temperature rises. And then Al Gore from the United States starts trying to influence global economies around the world, like Japan, by saying, like, he says stuff like this: the amount of excess heat being released every day is roughly the same as 750,000 Hiroshima-class atomic bombs. That's what he says. And people take him seriously because he's at panels talking to people. That's a little too far. I think we can agree the green cult people are a little too far now. It's like, let's just, how do we keep them? Same thing with World Economic Forum. In a way, I don't mind super rich people meeting up to talk about crazy ideas, because who knows what will come of it. But when Klaus Schwab starts saying, we penetrate the cabinets and you would eat the bugs, and Noah Harare from the World Economic Forum is like, human rights are just an imaginary thing. They don't really exist. And you're like, well, these people are crazy. But then you look and they're meeting your prime minister and they're influencing the prime minister, and the prime minister's like, this group is actually full of great people. And like, wait a minute, this is going. So you have the green people going too far. Then you have the Chinese government with their influence peddling operations as well. It's like, well, is this how we're going to operate in a society with these insane directives pummeling us every day? And not just like in this weird, like a fake fear thing, like, oogie boogie, the Chinaman's coming. It's like, it's not that at all. Well, they're here and they're trying to really influence the way that our lives are going to be run. And they seem all a little nutty, which is fine, but you can't really take center stage with the nuttiness. Does that make sense? I think it does. And I'm a nutty dude, so I understand these people better than most. So this idea of CO2 export and storage, it's this idea, and I mentioned it on the last podcast, did quite a deep dive. It's basically an air tax. And so by commodifying the air via CO2, it gives an infinite tax base and potentially a way for our economies to survive the de-dollarization movement and the fiat currency movement. If we can just tax the air and then sell the air via carbon, we will have an economy, and it's a green economy, so everybody's happy, right? But it's this conflaborator. It's a mixture. It's a soup of insane ideas that are now bubbling up to the surface of the way in which our money is going to be spent and our society is going to be oriented. And it's increasingly weird. And I know I'm just a podcaster, but sometimes like one person in like some organization will be like, you know what? I agree. Let's try to put a stop to this. So that's kind of the hope. You can hope. So speak up. More Japanese companies are seeking to export carbon dioxide emissions to Southeast Asian nations and elsewhere for underground storage as a way to tackle climate change, with over a dozen projects in the works, a tally by Kyoto News showed Sunday. The move comes as the Japanese government promotes carbon capture and storage, known as CCS. And sets the goal of putting the technology into practical use by 2030. That's the SDGs, that's the UN goal, and then Agenda 2030, all of that. It's always 2030. However, the technology costs are high and overseas projects could face local opposition. CCS technology captures CO2 from industrial plants before it can be emitted into the atmosphere and injects it deep underground for long-term storage. What? Trading house Mitsubishi Corp, major oil distributor Enios Corp. So this is what I'm talking about. This sounds like crazy people in the that you would encounter in a trailer park that have a wall full of red yarn connecting people and things together. And it's like, look, they're trying to get us all. But it's like, okay, who's behind this? Oh, Mitsubishi Corp, one of Japan's oldest and biggest corporations. And Enios Corp, a major oil distributor, and two other companies are studying a project to liquefy CO2 emitted from thermal power plants and oil factories in the Tokyo Bay area and ship it to Malaysia for storage there. What? That's green? About 3 million tons of CO2 is expected to be collected annually under the project, with the company's aim to start by fiscal 2030. It goes on from there, but it's like, Sumitomo, has another major corporation, has tied up with JFE Steel Corporations to conduct feasibility studies. And Osaka Gas also plans such moves. Friends of the Earth Malaysia has protested to the Japanese government and others over the possible storage of CO2 in Malaysia, blasting the exportation of emissions to global South countries as nothing but carbon colonialism. So instead of having a rational discussion about it, the opposition just sounds like a bunch of weirdo commies. Carbon colonialism? Really? Is that what you think this is? It is an unproven technology with high risk, high cost, and comes with long-term liability, the group said in an open letter made public in March. Quote, Japan must cut the emissions at the source and should not export or dump CO2 in other countries, end quote. But did you know that Japan has carbon credit trading schemes and wants to set up with the United Nations like an umbrella corporation all over the world for monitoring and exporting carbon and carbon offsetting and creating like a carbon futures market and all? It's like, it's basically air tax. So this would be a physical example of the air tax. So you would just pour a bunch of carbon into a container, ship it to Malaysia, and call that cleaning the air. It's an air tax. Carbon, the carbon market is a global air tax. It's insane. Whitney Webb, I was going to say Strieber, who was like an alien dude, recently published an article about how carbon technology is basically a form of monitoring. And I noted that in last week's podcast, we had a Japanese company called Farmscope or something like that. Look it up on the website, MatthewPMBigelow.com, which is a international platform kind of designed by Japanese NEC companies to use imagery all over the world on farms to help with the assistance of managing them in terms of these green movements and things like that. So it's definitely going ahead. And it's definitely a suck on all of us. So what do you think? Does this sound reasonable to you? Because it sounds like science fiction madness that kind of belongs at like like at a car show when you see concept cars and you're like, well, that would be neat one day. But these are people that are actively pursuing turning our lives into these scenarios. So that's why it's today's Weird Corner.
Weird Corner.
Truly bizarre. And that leads us into the next topic as well. Japan Society 5.0.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society. Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0. A technology-based, human-centered society. The fourth industrial revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face. It will, for example, free us from the stress of driving, allowing us to safely visit...
So that's the Japanese government's official promotion for their Japan Society 5.0 vision. I've been following it for about... since it was conceptualized in 2016, 2017, when I was working as an AI teacher at a telecoms company in Tokyo here. And then following up on it on the podcast ever since. Oddly enough, this AI society, it's an umbrella term not only just for AI. I have a love-hate relationship with AI where I see what AI can do. Like I can put onto like an image generator, generate this image, and then it makes an amazing image. But then 2 weeks later, the companies nerf the capabilities and it always returns like a very similar looking image. I'm like, okay, well that went south pretty fast. So it's amazing, but then it gets nerfed because you can't make money on it. Except if you sell it to people who have enough money to spend such things on. Like I would assume for a lot of AI image generation, corporate offices are tired of bad clip art that they have to use for their posters. But by having AI art that's safe and easy to use, it makes it look a lot better and it's a lot cheaper and you don't have to pay people to design flyers and things like that for in-house gatherings and whatnot. Okay, sure. Reduce the amount of time that employees spend dicking around with their presentation software. Sure, whatever, if that's the idea. But I also can see that it's very powerful. I remember following Israeli AI in late 2017-18, and one controversial use of AI was the ability to try to detect terrorism at airports. And it wasn't just like targeting at Jerusalem airport or whatever airport, Tel Aviv airport. I don't know the names of these places, the airports in Jerusalem and all that. But anyways, and it would be using kind of gesture recognition. So if somebody's going to commit a terrorist attack at an airport or a crowded place, or let's just say an airport or a concert venue, very similar layouts and people moving around, it would look at their actions, like furtive glancing, looking around, looking at their facial expressions and maybe doing some genetic or ethnic reading as well. And then kind of saying, maybe this person is likely going to blow some stuff up at the airport. Israel is surrounded by Muslim countries and Israel is doing a pretty good job these days, especially of pissing them all off. Not taking sides, don't take sides. But what I'm worried about is now that Israel is really deep, deep, deep in serious trouble with its campaigns in Gaza and trying to remove Hamas there and trying to connect it as well to Hezbollah in the north. They were using an AI program called Lavender, I believe, which set up 37,000 Palestinians as potential terrorists. So what I'm trying to say here is, perhaps, and this is the longstanding view of AI on the podcast. If AI is limited in scope and we can see where it begins and where it ends and it has a very targeted use case, it's not going to screw everything up. But if it's just unleashed willy-nilly all over the place and we don't know where it's beginning and where it's ending, the way humans change their behavior across everyday situations is so wild that the AI being designed to look at, for example, terrorists in an airport, well, people might have similar actions that they might do outside of an airport, and it has nothing to do with terrorism. It could be thinking about your finances or something like that. And then if the AI sees you thinking or looking like that, it might target you as a potential terrorist. So the idea of just copying and pasting these programs throughout society where they're based on one thing, but because a situation happens, they get implemented as another thing. And you just kind of say, well, we tried our best and we look, our results are pretty good so far, despite the amount of death that's happened or erroneous use cases that are being unleashed onto the public at large. There's just no responsibility for that because it's AI. You just say it's AI. By copying and pasting these things all over the place, it's going to lead to just insanity. And I believe that's what's happening with Israel right now. They're copying, just speculation, but it makes sense. As they get more and more pushed into war, they're probably looking at resources that they can utilize to make use of their limited resources. And AI would be one of them. So my belief is that Israel is making grave errors by copying and pasting its software of AI from terrorism at airports into just terrorism in general and making huge amounts of mistakes because of that. There's other similar AI software being used in Japan, and this is a common use case all over the world, where if you're a shop owner on a busy street and there's a part of the store where you can't really see people, you have an AI camera there, and people who are about to shoplift have a very set patterns in them, looking both ways, opening their jacket, putting something without a bag into the jacket, things like that. Maybe the AI camera can identify those things. But imagine if that program was just copied and pasted into every security camera all over the country, regardless of shops. Like, how often do you just put something into your coat because it's yours? So there's this idea where we have this AI, and if we can utilize it for very specific areas and very specific things, it's not going to ruin everything or just make everything worse. So it's not like I'm this person who's evangelical on AI and I regard it as this magical thing and we're all just going to be washed in AI and it's going to be Star Trek and the future and all that. My whole thing is there's this technology that, like, 6, 7, 8 years ago when I started really following it seriously, 10 years ago almost, coming over the horizon, like icebergs, like the Star Wars movies where they're going through an asteroid belt, and it's coming at you, and you have to maneuver your way through it, otherwise it's going to start screwing shit up really severely. And that's the way I view it here. So the idea that we could have AI terrorism detection at an airport where maybe somebody's exhibiting certain behaviors, you'd have a couple security guards go over and maybe talk to them to suss things out even further. But if you just say something like, well, that person's exhibiting terrorist-like behavior at the airport, we'll just shoot them with a drone, that's maybe not the way we should be handling it, right? It should be guiding the human specialists to areas that require their specialty to be used, instead of scanning the entire airport all the time and wasting who knows a god amounts amount of time. It would help them identify pinpoints where they could go investigate. And it wouldn't be every security guard. It would be like a team of security guards, and you would have traditional security guards doing their own thing. So it would be stacked up like that in such a way. Because once we try to just copy and paste this all over throughout society, it makes it worse every single time because the technology is designed by humans, and you can have people expert at terrorism at airports, but they're not going to be expert at terrorism in streets, or they're not going to be expert at understanding how people think about their finances at home and how those same facial considerations might lead them to also make terroristic ideas pop up in their brains at an airport. So these things aren't considered and they're not even known about. They just get applied onto each other over and over and over again. And then, of course, the ultimate example right now is China with their surveillance state and their social credit score, just making everybody kind of really pushing into a hodgepodge of reaction to the panopticon, everybody everywhere all the time. But anyways, let's take a look at some use cases of AI in Japan. This comes to us from the Japan Times Business and Tech, and it says, AI is spying on the food we throw away. And of course, the Japan Times has its issues. Like most newspapers, they're probably filled with people that don't know anything about AI, but have very, very vague ideas about activism. We got the whole article here. So this is just a use case that I think might be interesting for streamlining product development at a hotel. A hotel in chain installs a camera in its trash bins to spy on what guests are tossing. I wouldn't say spy on. I would just say monitor. It's not really spying. It turns out its breakfast croissants are too big. Many are going to waste, along with profits. A supermarket can suddenly see, hidden in its own sales data, that yellow onions aren't selling as fast as red onions and are likely to be trashed. The brains behind both of these efforts? Artificial intelligence. Oh God, I hate journalism writing about AI. It's part of an emerging industry that's trying to cash in on a senseless human problem, the huge amount of uneaten food that goes from supermarkets and restaurants to the dumpster. Much of that, if it's not composted, ends up in landfills where it decays, spent sending potent planet-warming greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. You know, and that's also the issue with journalism. They just de facto go back into idiotic activism. Enter a new business opportunity. A company called Winnow has developed the AI tool that, I'm not going to say, that spies on restaurant garbage. This is so juvenile, Japan Times. An AI tool that monitors restaurant garbage. Another company, Afresh, digests supermarket data, analyzes or compiles supermarket data to look for wasteful mismatches between what a store is stocking and what people are buying. AI has a dirty environmental footprint of its own, blah, blah, blah. So it goes on from there. I'm going to be linking at it, MatthewPMBigelow.com. You can go read it for yourself there. But for example, when you have a hotel and you're when you're just acquiring your breakfast materials and people are, the hirees are constantly being, you know, hired and quitting and moving around. They don't care about how much food your hotel throws away. An AI tool that monitors this thing could be very useful. Most food at a restaurant in a hotel, the breads are really generally not the best. So for managers to just be able to see this waste, analyze this waste, and then make a change to the size or the amount of croissants or whatever that they want in the hotel, boom, problem solved, end of story. It's not this tool that's going to destroy the world, and it's not some sort of magic voodoo. It's just a monitoring management analytics tool connected to a computer that has a camera on it that identifies patterns that you want it to identify. Next one, Society 5.0. We're not going to go too much into this, but Uber to launch ride-hailing services in Japan. We've had Uber in a very light version in Japan, but it hasn't been what it has been around the rest of the world. Uber Japan said it will launch its ride-hailing services on Monday, that's today, with people using their personal vehicles to offer paid rides. The move is designed to cope with a shortage of taxi drivers in urban areas and tourist spots in the country. So Uber is finally in Japan. Next one for Japan Society 5.0, looking more into the facial recognition zone for the consumer market here, which is really where a lot of these solutions are going to be found and utilized. And this, I'm doing a lot of research in this in the Japanese side of things and then just translating it into English using the software. NEC to provide facial recognition payment for demonstration of local currency service. NEC has established Topan Digital Co. NEC is one of the major camera companies, especially for facial recognition in the world. Topan Digital Co. To revitalize the local economy through the provision of safe and convenient local currency services. They aim to provide NEC's facial recognition payment service to demonstrate the local currency service implemented by NEC. Specifically in Chino City, Nagano Prefecture, they will link NEC's facial recognition payment service and Topan's digital cashless payment platform and conduct a demonstration of payment of local currency using facial recognition. It will be held in April. By utilizing NEC's facial recognition technology, users at retail stores can safely and easily make hands-free payments without the need to take out credit cards or whatever. Okay. This is an example of AI not destroying the world, just providing people with an extra way to use their face to pay. Now, I don't know how long it takes, and I don't know the security involved, but this is just an example. The next one is Chino Chamber of Commerce and Industry conducts demonstration experiment of facial recognition payment at physical stores, making payments even for people who do not have or are unfamiliar with smartphones. So this is this one comes to us from IT Leaders, another Japanese website. But when looking at the consumer applications in Japan a few years ago, there was far and few between. But now we're getting to the sort of this distributed release of test case scenarios in Japan for facial recognition payment. I don't mind it, as long as it's not the only thing. My whole thing is a yes and not a no but. So when people say we're cashless now, I don't support that. I want to use cash. I want to use credit. I want to use facial recognition. I want to use QR code. I want it all. Why does this next wave of technology mean the previous thing that we're using is moot? Quite the opposite, right? It's a yes and scenario. It's just software. Okay. I think that's more or less the same article, but I'll be posting it up onto MatthewPMBigelow.com. And then next one on the one, using AI for analytics when for very complex organizations that have a low overhead and need to extend profit as quickly as possible, this AI programs, when implemented correctly, can also have a positive impact. I'm basically just trying not to sound like, ooh, look, it's AI, it's magic, it's going to save us all. But I think that when we have this idea of AI from the movies, in part playing such a huge role in people's minds of what AI is going to do, or even like the word to describe it, artificial intelligence, it's so misleading in a way. You want to have like a grounded viewpoint of it, and just calling it AI sounds kind of dumb, but I've listened to tons and tons of Chinese people in English talk about their AI solutions for robotics, smartphone production, and even I saw a video of missiles, like Chinese factories making their own missiles with no humans really involved in the process at all. So automated missile production, and they call it AI. But the Chinese people just say AI, and they don't care about the nuances of the words that like Western people get involved in. Like AI, you mean a robot friend from the 1950s sci-fi movies all over the place? And we're just obsessed with this Hollywood version of AI versus what AI actually can be, what I'm trying to stick to, which is a set of automated thresholds utilizing wireless technology to make things run smoother and more efficiently and to help people with expertise manage that expertise, something along those lines. Most of AI is garbage, though. But here we go. Kirin vending machines utilize SoftBank's proprietary AI algorithm. Joint demonstration results show that demand forecasts were highly accurate compared to actual sales. When is this from? This is from the Shokuhin.net, and this is Shokuhin Shimbun, which means, I don't know, food newspaper. Very interesting idea for a newspaper in Japan here. Anyway, hold on. April 6th, 2024. So very recent. Starting in October, Kirin Beverage will gradually introduce SoftBank's vending machine operation improvement solution, Vendi, to vending machines managed by its group companies in an effort to reduce work hours related to vending machine operations and increase vending machine sales. If you've ever been to Japan, you know that everywhere you go, there are vending machines. There's vending machines everywhere. And to manage these vending machines requires very complex logistics. And a lot of it is done by routes. So if you have sensors in the machines that tell truck drivers which items you need to bring in advance, something like that, or where you need to go based on volume of sales, so you don't fill up, you don't go to a vending machine that is full first and then go to a vending machine that is empty next. You go to the one that's full first. If these types of AI protocols can be utilized by companies, well, it cuts down on man hours, gasoline, the amount of trucks you need, and so on and so on. That's the idea here. And he's like, is that really AI? Well, that's what they're calling it. That's what they're calling it. And again, it's just, it's compiling the data, setting a threshold, and automating that threshold for the people with the expertise. So what would that be in this case with the scenario I've just laid out? Oh, look, the sensors in this vending machine can see that we don't need drink ABC, but we need drink XYZ. So then that gets sent to the driver. Driver, bring drink XYZ to this vending machine first, because this vending machine really needs it now. Okay, that's it. End of story. That's it. Was that really artificial? That's what they're calling it. Good luck changing it. On March 12th, the press briefing was held where SoftBank's Makoto Matsuyama, corporate business headquarters, digital transformation headquarters, operation design, third business engineering headquarters, talked about the unique features of Vendi that set it apart from other business improvement solutions. The general manager of the business promotion department said, quote, "The reason for demand forecasting is that it was developed completely and specifically for the vending machine industry," end quote. So this isn't a copy and paste thing. This isn't saying we looked at where cars and people are and then are just copying and pasting that into an analytics platform that tell drivers where to go. It's designed specifically for a very unique set of parameters, the vending machine market in Japan, which is very, very competitive. Vendi uses SoftBank's proprietary AI algorithm to process big data that combines various information on vending machines, products, sales, inventory, etc., and creates a patrol plan for vending machines scattered in an area under its jurisdiction and a list of product configurations to be loaded into the vending machines. And it goes on from there. Hold on. I'll just give you this number here. It should have been earlier in the article, by the way, Shokohin, a food newspaper. Kirin Beverage has approximately 180,000 vending machines nationwide. Of these, Kirin Beverage will complete the installation of Vendi on approximately 80,000 units directly managed by the end of September 2025. And then it has some expectations of reducing labor and things like that. Yeah, so if you just have 5 vending machines in a small town and you know everybody there, maybe you don't need an AI program to help you out with your logistics. But when you have 180,000 vending machines and all these people coming and going, quitting, hiring, getting trucks, fuel, which drinks to bring and not bring, blah, blah, blah. Maybe this analytics service, which is called AI, can help people out and provide the beverage industry with much needed assistance. That's going to be Japan Society 5.0 for today. The reason why I went on this whole rant is because I've been listening to people talk about AI or even like the journalists, and I get frustrated because there's especially like Americans who go into this idea of AI going to be this big thing that's going to save the world or destroy the world, or it's supposed to be our friends, or it's supposed to be all of these giant, huge things because that's the way it's being touted as. Well, it's really none of that. Or the idea that AI is going to be some force of like alien weapon technology where it somehow install lasers on the moon, all that stuff. It's like, no, it's used. I'll say it again. It's wireless technology stacked together that sets a threshold to tell experts where to go to implement their expertise or where their expertise is needed. That's basically what it is. If you can take that definition and go with it, You will be a billion steps ahead of the rest of the world in terms of understanding what AI and successful AI applications can actually provide for the workforce. And it's going to happen anyway, so it may as well be done correctly.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society. Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0, a technology-based, human-centered society. The fourth industrial revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face. It will, for example, free us from the stress of driving, allowing us to safely visit anyone, anytime. We will have access to the latest medical advancements at a low cost.
Let's take a look at eating those bugs.
I'm going to eat all the bugs.
Okay, you're just going to eat them one at a time, though, okay?
Okay. I've got one. I'm going to go catch that one.
No, finish the one that you have in your mouth first.
So this one comes to us from Japan Forward, the English arm of the Sankei Shimbun, supposed to be one of those super evil right-wing, newspapers. But they're all in on the 2030 agenda as well. And today is no exception. Making aquaculture more sustainable. Marubeni farms yellowtail on insect-based feed. I've been covering the eating the bugs, you will eat the bugs, on the podcast for a while now. And about a year ago, they really started pushing it hard into the Japanese schools. And of course, the trope pushed by, I don't know, whoever was implementing these programs was, your culture eats insects. And they would be like, yeah, here's some people in a river close to your home 150 years ago eating bugs. And all the kids would go, wow, eating bugs is our culture. Then they would say, that's why we have a giant cricket factory on the edge of your town, and we're going to produce so many crickets that we'll convert them into butter and use them in your food for baked goods. And they said, we'll try that. And then everybody said, no, that's not really, that's kind of disgusting, and there really is no market demand. But then the companies would say, well, the UN is saying, because of all of the food crises that are being this is me, engineered around the world, we're going to need to eat bugs. There's just going to be no other option. And everyone went, we're not going to eat them. But they really, I don't know who they are, but there really is an effort to push bug eating. And if it's for chickens, I guess it's okay, but I don't know. But Marubeni Farms Yellowtail on insect-based feed. Marubeni has developed feed for farm-raised fish using high-nutrient insects and successfully raised yellowtail on this insect-based feed. This marks the first time yellowtail has been successfully farmed on insect feed. Past successes have been reported with sea bream. I would just say that I would imagine that if fish can eat insects, they would. But do they only eat insects or farm fish feed? Starting in February, Marubeni is providing small quantities to an Italian restaurant that has introduced dishes using the yellowtail. The aim is to get feedback from consumers on taste. If reactions are did you enjoy that fish? Because it was made with insects. We're never coming back to your restaurant again. The company plans to expand distribution channels. Creating new demand for farm-raised yellowtail is also expected to contribute to the expansion of the insect-based feed business. It says that there's a rising cost of fish meal, and I'll be including a picture of these insect-based feed pellets manufactured by Marubeni's subsidiary. It's fish food, so it doesn't really need to look good. Meanwhile, the expansion of aquaculture has led to more stable fish supply, but fish meal itself is anything but stable. A decrease in anchovy catch, one of the primary ingredients in fish meal, has led to rising costs. In this context, insect-based feed is attracting increasing attention as a fish meal alternative. So Amado Benny is partnering with the French insect farming startup YNSECT, Insect, in March 2023. It goes on from there. I'm not going to read the whole thing. And it says, and find more great articles on the environment and the challenges of achieving the SDGs on our affiliated website, Japan to Earth, sparking a transition to a sustainable future. Yeah, it's really crazy how these crazy right-wing newspapers like the Sankei Shimbun, which is what left-wing people often describe it as, are all in on the SDGs. And that, of course, means not having the fish feed be based on fish, which is what I imagine fish eat, but replacing anchovies with bugs. And that's going to make everything fine and dandy. And we're going to put those in the restaurants and you're going to eat it because things are getting more expensive. So you will eat the bugs is the plan. And I would just encourage anyone, well, I guess if you want to, if this is your bag, then good luck. I mean it, you know, you found it, the Japan What podcast, insect fish for you, lucky day. But for me, I don't plan on supporting this industry at all. It appears to be very nefarious in scope and kind of creating scarcity. Bird flu. Well, we need to kill all the poultry and now there's not enough eggs and not enough fish. So here's bugs. That's always the way it seems to go. Oh, look, rising temperatures. It just means there's not enough food for you. Here's some bugs. Really? Are you sure about that? What's with this sort of weird set of coincidences where every time there's a food shortage, there's some weird SDG company saying, here's some bugs. Just try these bugs. It's your culture. No, it's not your, okay. It's for your fish. Because it costs. It's like whatever they try to do, they really, really, really want bugs. And whoever they are, I don't know who they are, but there's this real kind of brainwashed green cultism where they just say to each other, eating bugs is green. And now you will eat the bugs.
I'm gonna eat all the bugs.
You're just gonna eat them one at a time, though, okay?
Okay. I got one. I'm gonna go catch that one.
No, finish the one that you have in your mouth first.
All right. What else do we got? We'll do one war story, and that'll be it. It's kind of stupid, so we can do it for today. Die for the war. Everybody moves. Die for the good, for the good. Die for the war. Die for the war. Recently there's the supply chain war, but then there's the actual war, but then like the war, I mean, between Taiwan and China or Ukraine and Russia. But for me, it seems to be about supply chains is the real underlying cause of these wars. Who's going to gain control of the global supply chain network or who's going to come on top, be the number one global supply chain network. But to enforce these supply chain networks, we need military alliances. And for some reason, because China is involved with supporting Russia in the Ukraine war right now, a lot of NATO countries have been sniffing around Japan's crack to try to get Japan to open up to NATO. Japan, a Far East Asian country, is being pushed to join in one way or another, or to collaborate more and more with a North Atlantic Treaty Organization set up to counter the Soviet Union. It's a very strange thing. And over time, it's become more or less a U.S.-funded tax grab and military-industrial complex push. The current head of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, I think his name is a Norwegian. But recently, this is coming to us from EstoniaWorld.com. And the only reason I'm bringing it into Japan, what podcast, is that, well, we're constantly being pushed to join NATO to fight against Russia and China. But then NATO keeps pushing these people with no military experience into the leadership roles. So then what is Japan being pushed into as a result of that is not good, in my opinion. Estonian PM Kaja Kallas, to become the new NATO chief. The current prime minister of Estonia has won the backing of the United States, France, Germany, and the United Kingdom to become the next secretary general of NATO, becoming the first woman and the first from Eastern and Central Europe to lead the alliance. Until recently, the favorite to succeed Jens Stoltenberg as the NATO secretary general was the outgoing Dutch prime minister, Mark Rutte. Mark Rutte is a WEF globalist, by the way. But Kallas appears to have won over the Germans and the Americans, who had a change of heart. So Estonia, tiny little country, very big on AI, actually, and blockchain for their government services. They are basically automating the government in many ways there. But it's like it's a woman, so she has to get in. Well, I don't really care who a woman or man or whoever is leading NATO. But when I looked at Kaja Kallas's Wikipedia page, she was born in 1977, so she's a little bit older than I am. She became a member of the Estonian Bar Association. She became a partner in a law firm. She was in a business school. Member of Estonian Parliament, member of European Parliament, return to politics, Prime Minister of Estonia, and basically has some weird corruption charges from being married to somebody involved in some sort of logistics scam involved with Russia and Ukraine. And she's been a member of the Board of Trustees from the Friends of Europe, and member of the European Council on Foreign Relations, and an advisory board to the Women Economic Forum. I first thought of that, I saw the World Economic Forum, but no, it's the Women Economic Forum. So how is this person supposed to lead us into war against Russia? How is this person who is a lawyer and a business person, just like a business school, but a lifelong politician from Estonia? Why should Japan be joining these groups and say, yeah, all of these people that can't defend Ukraine against Russia, because Ukraine's lost, all these people who rely on America expenditure for defense, why should Japan be pushed into a NATO arm as a Far East Asian country? So it seems to me that these people shouldn't be trusted and that they are operating with just like the bad use cases of AI, just everything, everywhere, all the time. We're going to put this, it's like, well, she's a woman, so she's going to lead NATO. Okay. So is she like a leader for war? Does she know how to shoot a gun? Does she aware of the, we don't know these things, but anyways, Japan has to join NATO now because it's a Far East Asian country and because China is helping Russia in Ukraine. Therefore, we need NATO to help us with Taiwan. It's like, do you really think the Prime Minister of Estonia can really understand the logistics of providing aid to Taiwan if China attacks, unless she just gets up on TV and says, we stand with Taiwan? So that's going to be the war segment for today. I thought that was very silly. I've been tracking the NATO aspect of pushing Japan into NATO's arms for about a year now with great suspicion. And every move I see NATO do, I kind of go, I don't really think you guys are protecting the world against communism. It just seems like some sort of military industrial conference or complex grift, really. So you guys all seem like a bunch of grifters trying to be my friend, but I don't think you're really friends of Japan in any way or shape or form. So let's hope that Japan can distance itself from NATO and let NATO go with the rest of Europe, which is going to be probably, before it can rise up again, down a very, very dark and dirty toilet.
Die for the war, everybody moves. Die for the good, for the good. Die for the war, die for the war.
And that's going to settle it for today. Make sure to go to MatthewPMBigelow.com. You can also send us donations at paypal.me/JapanWUT. You can also download a Podcasting 2.0 compliant app. Go to podcastapps.com. Get rid of your legacy app. Get Podverse. Get Fountain. Get get a bunch of them and experience it for yourself. You can donate Satoshis, those are Bitcoin micropayments, directly from your GetAlbi wallet to the podcaster. It's all automated. It's all done with open source protocols, so there's no middlemen or middlewomen in the way of your donating. It's a fantastic ecosystem, and it's censorship proof and future resilient as well. With where we're going, we're going to need more of these decentralized networks providing our podcasting services. So thank you. You found it. The Japan What Podcast, episode 146. Coming at you from the armpit of Asia, I bid thee a very heartful and warmful ja mata ne.
You.